Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Jeff Edwards and Jerry Urshebeck for the KERM Lawn and Garden Program. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Fantastic. It's Arbor Day.
Arbor Day, and we have a special Arbor Day guest.
Would you like to introduce our guest this morning?
Amy.
Amy.
Thank you so much for being here with us for Arbor Day.
I think he forgot your last name.
Yeah, stage fright.
way to put me on. Amy Seiler.
There you go.
So I have a cute story. So I was pulling in and I got gas yesterday and I was paying the clerk and the clerk goes, well, we got some rain coming and he says, that'll make stuff grow. You'll have something to talk about on your radio show. I said, oh, well, thank you so much for being a listener. I said, we have Amy Seiler on the show tomorrow and she's the, you know, like the tree woman. And he goes, maybe you could ask her how to grow a tree. I kill trees. I can't grow a tree for nothing. So here's a shout out to you. Then maybe we can talk about how to grow a tree.
We also have another guest in the studio with us today who begged to be here just because Amy was going to be here.
Tom, I love John trees, McCreary. And Amy does such a nice job of presenting. So I beg everybody to come to this one.
You just wanted special time with her so you could, like, pick her brain, didn't
right,
you?
Right.
Perfect. Let's go.
Hey, before we jump into the program, let's take a few minutes and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be back right after this.
It's springtime in the valley, and before you head outdoors to get started on your spring cleanup list, make sure that you stop at Century Lumber Center for all of the supplies that you'll need. They have garden and leaf rakes, along with lawn and leaf bags for yard debris. They also have what you need for the greenest lawn around, with dethatching blades for power raking, Jordan Green Master and crabgrass fertilizer for healthy growth and fast cleanup. Century Lumber in Torrington is your headquarters for spring projects.
Ready to make your house the envy of the neighborhood? Then your first stop should be Great Gardens in Torrington, the region's largest and most gorgeous independent garden center. Stocked full of annuals, hanging baskets, veggies, perennials, trees, and shrubs, they have all of your gardening needs covered. They even have a large selection of decor to bring that wow factor to your yard and garden. Open year-round and ready for you now. Stop into Great Gardens, 1 mile west of Main Street in Torrington.
When it comes to concrete, no one does it better than J-Build Homes. If you've been wondering who to go to for your next concrete project, Jeff is the one to call at 307-631-4449. Your concrete work will be done right the first time. Whether it's your driveway, foundation, patio, sidewalk, stamping, or stain, J-Build Homes will do quality work no matter how big or small. Call Jeff today for a free estimate. That's J-Build Homes Incorporated, located at 7250 Road 45, just west of the Port of Entry.
Landscaping Plus on East Highway 26 in Torrington is ready to help you create the outdoor space of your dreams. With an experienced crew and an eye for attractive landscaping design, you can trust Landscaping Plus with any project you might have for your yard. They also carry sprinkler parts and other lawn and garden items that you may need for those do-it-yourself projects. Give Rob a call today, and he can help you find the perfect design for your home. Landscaping Plus in Torrington, 532-6067.
When you're in the pest control business, you get called a lot of things. Bug guy, exterminator, terminator, even rat catcher. Here at Menzel Pest Control, our customers agree on one word for us, professional. For 46 years, we've provided the most educated, low-impact, and effective remedies for unwanted bugs and rodents. Spring is the time to stop little pests like ants, mice, and spiders before they cause big problems. Visit us at BenzelPestControl.com and schedule a visit today.
Stop and see Peaceful Prairie Nursery in Mitchell, Nebraska. They have a big selection of grade A mulch that is on sale at 15% off. Trees are also 20% off through Saturday to celebrade Arbor Day. You'll find shade trees, flowering trees, fruit trees, and evergreens. And they're all 20% off through Saturday. Stop and check them out today. They're located on Brookway Drive in Mitchell, or you can call them at 308-631-7452. Peaceful Prairie Nursery in Mitchell, Nebraska. Also, check them out on Facebook.
All right, everybody. Good morning again. This is Jeff Edwards and Jerry Urshebeck for the KERM Lawn and Garden Program, along with Amy Seiler and the other guy, Tom John McCreary. So, I think we're going to talk about trees since it's Arbor Day. And what do you want to talk about trees?
So I've been thinking about this for a while because, you know, this is like one of my favorite days of the year to come down here and hang out with you and get to talk about trees. So on my drive up, I was thinking about all of my favorite trees. And Tom John actually asked me today, Amy, what are your three favorite trees that you like to plant in Nebraska? Well, I think it could cross over to Wyoming because we're so similar.
Close enough.
Yes. But I was stating, I love hackberry. I know that it is a native tree and some people think it's kind of weedy. It does kind of have some issues with decay and it doesn't compartmentalize very well and it will get a little bit of rot. I can look past those little faults because it's such a great tree. It has a moderate growth rate. It tolerates our soils with the high pH. It'll live in a sandy soil or it'll live in a heavy soil. It's just a really solid tree. And if you prune it correctly and manage it, it will live a really long time. City of Gearing, most of, like 32% of their tree canopy is hackberry. Hmm. And it is... It's a very old canopy, but it's one of those trees that I will always recommend planting.
I like hackberry because of those traits. It also has a very interesting bark.
It's
not a loud bark, but it's an interesting bark. I knew one of you guys was going to go there.
It's a weathered bark, isn't it? Isn't it like a wet?
It's warty.
It's warty. It's very deep.
Furrowed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Weathered.
So,
sure.
You know, and here's rutted. This is the really cool thing. So if you look at hackberry in different regions, the bark is different and it's all genetics. And some areas of the country, you are going to see the bark color is a little bit lighter, but it really is kind of warty, especially in the canopy on the lateral branches. You'll have kind of a smooth bark, but then you'll see all of these little things that just kind of appear like bumps or warts. And it's really, really interesting. Other parts that those lateral branches will be much smoother. And the trunk of it will always kind of be that deep furrowed, but it's so cool how different they are in different parts of the country.
It kind of reminds me of a warty pumpkin.
Yes, exactly.
You know, certain parts of it, certain aspects of it remind me of a warty pumpkin. So, it's very unique. It's the one thing is it does have galls,
mm-hmm.
hackberry nipple galls, and to my knowledge, they're caused by an insect, or are they caused by something else?
It's an insect.
Yeah.
And that does not turn me off at all. It's actually just kind of a symbiotic relationship. It's an actual parasitic wasp, and it takes advantage of the hackberry. The adult lays its egg in the leaf, and then the leaf says, huh, there's something strange going on my leaf, and so I'm going to create callus tissue over whatever that is, and it's actually the egg.
More warty tissue.
It's more warty tissue, and actually, so then it develops that gall over it, but it doesn't harm the tree at all, because that tissue is still green, it's still photosynthesizing, it's just hardened, and it creates this wonderful little environment for that insect when it's in its
larval stage
to just kind of feed on the leaf, and it doesn't hurt the tree at all. And then in October it usually will hatch out, and it's just a teeny tiny, if you see all those little like natty things on your screens or they're wanting to come in your house in the fall, that's the adult form of the nipple or of that parasitic wasp. Sorry, I don't know why I said nipple, but parasitic wasp. And it's just this really cool relationship. It does not hurt the tree at all. Now, it drives some people crazy and they want to spray it and whatnot, but
It's not a problem.
It's not a big deal. Matter of fact, when I was a kid, this was one of my favorite things. This sounds so dorky. And I think I've loved trees since I was, like, really little. But
it's okay to be a dork on this program.
Am I in good company? Okay.
Yes.
So I loved it when the hackberries would drop their leaves, because as they dried out, you could step on those leaves and it would make this big crunch because of all those galls on there. I mean, it was just, like, so satisfying.
Think how many of those little wasp lives you destroyed.
I didn't. They had already hatched. I did not harm any insects in that activity because they'd already hatched.
Okay.
So,
right.
Yeah, that's. I love hackberry.
But wouldn't you agree that every tree has a little bit of a pro and a con value to it?
Absolutely. Kind of like you and me, Jerry.
Not
like
you and I.
And Tom, there's good and bad in all of us. Yeah, absolutely. It's what can you tolerate?
What other trees do you like?
So, I absolutely love ponderosa pine. I love it. It's one of my favorite trees. And I know that not everybody in town can grow that tree because it can get so big and so tall. But if you're on the edge of town or you have a double lot or an acreage, that's a tree you should plant. Now, should you plant it smack dab right in the middle of your turf grass? Absolutely not. It'll never forgive you. It absolutely hates it. Yeah. It wants no part of that. But it does want to be on the edge of your landscape where you can give it supplemental water when it's young, and then it really kind of wants you to leave it alone unless it's, like, super hot and dry.
Now, mine, I've got one in the front yard, and the follicles are starting to brown and drop. I think it's a natural thing, and the reason it does that is for the pH. It drops those and makes a more acid soil, which is good for, don't you think, Amy?
So we would like to think that, and there is acid in those, but studies have been done, and they've tried to test the amount of acid, and it's not significant enough to, like, really be impactful and change your soil pH. Everybody used to think that, oh gosh, when all these needles drop on the ground, it's the acid from the needles that keeps everything from growing underneath it. Well, in fact, it's that it's shady, that you probably have 2 to 3 inches of needles. And so very few things want to grow in those kind of environments. But is there a little bit of, it does put off a little bit of acid, but nothing to be really impactful in changing your soil pH.
Nothing to be really happy about.
No. I don't want to burst your bubble on that, but yeah.
And some people are so diligent about taking all of that mulch
away
and going, oh, but you know, what if a fire gets in there, burn up my tree? Oh, well, there's nothing growing under there. Well, there's nothing really growing under there anyway, unless you had some shady plants.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. And you know, people want to, like, plant potentillas or, you know, that's my grandpa tried that under his spruce trees for years. I'm like, I just don't think that's going to work. And it wasn't because it was so acidic. It's because there's not enough sun. Only shady plants will want to live there. And I really hesitate planting a lot underneath those trees because every time you're planting, you're disrupting those roots. And, you know, there's, you know, an abundance of roots. But anytime you're doing any disruption, It affects the tree.
And they're close to the surface, so a lot of those roots on any kind of a pine, correct?
On any tree. You'll find it, you know, most of the roots in any trees are between 0 and 24 inches of that soil profile. So, you know, anytime you're digging, you're going to do, and those feeder roots are, a lot of them are right on top because they're advantageous. They want to, like, grab as much moisture and nutrients as they possibly can. And so that's why they're up there.
So they were talking on public radio the other day about how trees help each other.
Mm.
Tell
me what you heard, and
well,
I want to hear about it.
It just said that if you have two of the same species of trees, that they'll share the water.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not buying it.
Buy it.
They've
really
mated for life, Tom John.
So.
Now, are you saying they sing Kumbaya?
Yeah, I think so, Jerry. I think they do Kumbaya.
I love that you asked that question. Why don't you buy it? Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, it's just a competition, you know. I hope they do, but I don't know if they do or not. That's why I asked.
So that brings up interesting mental images, right? It's like, you're feeling a little dry today. Here, have some of my water.
Oh, no. No, please go ahead and have some of mine.
It also goes along with nutrients, not just the water. I'd be thrilled if that was the case. Is it true?
That's what the research is telling us.
Yes.
I believe that I don't even recall what study it was, but I believe that they've done some radioactive isotope tracing, and they have put it in the soil, and it's only species to species. It may be as high as genus, so like if you had American linden and small leaf linden, they're of the same genus, so they could... their roots could graft together. But what they have discovered is that they injected these isotopes over here and then they traced it and they moved throughout all of those roots because those roots can graft together and then it can transport. And if the first tree has abundant moisture, it's able to transport it to the next tree in line, and it is water and nutrients because they're uptaking both of those. That's my understanding of those studies. I haven't looked at them for a while, but, you know, we're always wanting to humanize trees just so that people can understand them. What's that called? Anthropomorphizing or something?
Yes, it is.
That big word.
I'm glad you said it, not me.
You know, and I think it's for people, they want people to try and, like, understand trees more. You really can't do that. The tree doesn't really have a brain to say, hey buddy, you're looking a little droopy today, let me see if I can. But the physics of all of it, maybe what's occurring in the leaf on the tree that's dry has more ability to trigger pressure.
Yeah,
I mean, we're really getting deep here, but it can pull that more than the other tree. I don't understand how all of it works, but there is a lot of books out there now and research that says that they will graft and they will share nutrients. And that's, we do not give that activity that takes place underground enough credit with the mycorrhizae and all of the other...
Hey, if you can't see it, it doesn't exist.
people, you gotta have faith. but it's really cool. There's a lot of research that needs to be done more on what's going on below the soil surface so that we can grow trees better and have them be more productive.
But it couldn't have been a dual action. It could be competition and sharing. Because if you have, and would you explain what turgor pressure is?
No.
Okay. So if I have a tree over here and it's sucking as much water because... It hasn't rained for a long time. Once it's full, it doesn't suck water as hard, and so then the other tree is like, oh, "Well, I'm full. You go right ahead." So cows will drink, and then they'll move away so that another cow can drink. I think it's a sharing activity.
It's polite trees. No, after you.
Polite. No, please. You take the larger piece of pie.
Amy, that is very, very interesting. When I heard it, I decided I needed to ask you, and I'm glad that they share.
How deep do you want to go into the turgor pressure discussion?
Well, I mean, the turgor pressure has a lot to do with the stomate in the leaf, too, doesn't it?
So the stomate, we're getting into some deep physiology here, right? So the stomate is the valve on the leaves to help the plant respire or breathe, transfer oxygen and CO2 back and forth, right? So if it's hot, those stomates will close and prevent over-breathing, I guess, to simplify
it. Save water.
Yeah, and so those stomates are driven by what is called turgor pressure. And so if the plant has got enough moisture and stuff, it will close all those. If it's not, the whole leaf will droop My best one for this is like squash in the middle of summertime, right? So you think you're watering it enough, mm-hmm. everything looks good, but by the middle of the afternoon, it's going, geez, it's hot. Mm-hmm. It just starts to wilt. That all has to do with adequate moisture and the turgor pressure controlling how the plant is breathing.
The worst I ever saw you guys was beets in the middle of the afternoon.
Oh, yeah, beets are the same way.
The leaves just drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, whether they're edible beets or sugar beets, it's amazing.
That big fleshy leaf that they're trying to preserve and make sure that they can open back up in the morning when it's damper and cooler.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go, let's go deep into this. So I think this is fascinating because, you know, trees and all plants have different responses. So tell me this, do you believe that when it is in that wilting process, it's also reducing the area that is getting hit directly by sunlight, and so it's an adaptation or a mechanism to protect the plant from all the impacts of the intense sun and heat. Is that true, do you think?
Less surface area,
yeah. Yes.
I believe.
So do I.
Yeah.
It's like putting sunglasses on a plant.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would think. Mm-hmm. So just shade me a little bit.
Yeah. So here's another thing in high tunnels and hoop houses and those enclosed space production things, tomatoes oftentimes and peppers will start to curl up.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a herbicide injury.
Yes.
But the reason that they're curling up is that they're actually getting too much sunlight. They're trying to close off and reduce their surface area.
So, that is very cool.
So shade cloth on top of one of those structures is helpful, and it allows that plant to open up and kind of relax and get the adequate light that it needs. And there's varieties of tomatoes that it's really bad where they'll just curl up and everybody thinks, oh, I think I got some herbicide injury.
But it's actually heat.
Yeah.
That is so interesting. So we're not talking about trees right now, but so there are different plants that probably thrive more in that environment. So corn seems to just do extremely well in the heat. Is that correct?
Until about 102, 103, I think.
And then it shrivels? Or does it?
Well, then it stops. Mm-hmm. It's like me. I stop at about 102, 103.
72 degrees, Jerry.
Yeah.
Is the perfect temperature.
But corn stops. Mm-hmm. It just stops. And then you'll have like 2 or 3 weeks in August that it just so...
Just hangs out.
...godly hot, and it just...
It's like, forget it.
Forget it.
So, you know, I think it's important to remember, you know, when we're selecting locations for our trees, you know, there are some trees that are not as heat adapted as others. And so you really want to be thoughtful. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, what trees are great. All trees are wonderful in the right location. So for example, let's use a redbud. Redbuds are a tree that grows in eastern hardwood forests as an understory tree.
And they're in the bean family.
Yes, they're a legume. Yes, they are. They have a pod. And what's interesting is that they will do better in a cooler environment because they are not, they can't handle the intense sun. So they're not going to photosynthesize as well when it gets to a certain temperature or they have too much sunlight. You know, the tree, it's so cool to watch the succession of trees in the forest. So that's your understory canopy. And then you have your trees that love more sunlight or more productive, like your oaks. And in those forests, your tulip trees, your gum trees, those are all like reaching towards the sun to get as much as they possibly can. And they're more adapted to that heat environment. Because when it's too hot, they also are closing that stomate. That means they're not absorbing carbon dioxide, which means they're not photosynthesizing. Correct.
And you've told us that if you have a tree that's on its way out, plant another tree underneath it get ready for the demise of the original tree.
Correct.
Trees die. People need to accept that trees die and be ready to remove them when they do.
Or when they're nearly dead.
Or when they're nearly dead, yes.
Jeff, I have two Mayday trees, and one of them's got canker really bad. Uh-huh. So I just, one of the suckers, it's probably 4 feet high now, because that tree isn't going to make it. And I love the trees. Jerry's got some. And they're just a great tree. I like the bark. I'm like you. Mm-hmm. It's very cool.
The bark is really tender. And my grandkids, nieces and nephews, love to take a nail and insert their first and last letter of their name. And I'm like going, what the? They didn't ask. What are you doing? And so they scarred over really nicely, but it didn't leave their imprint. So 30 years later, like it's they're gone. But I too had some canker and weeping from that, and I just had to cut that portion off, and nip it off.
Mm-hmm.
So any canker, but it also leads to my brother's question: how come apricot trees bleed? He had one that started bleeding, and it just started from up on the crotch and came all the way down to the bottom, and it as well died. I had to have it removed.
It bled
just
to death,
stuff.
Jerry.
It did. And, you know, if you put a tourniquet on a tree, it really reacts.
It didn't have a buddy to share its nutrients with, so it bled to death.
Okay.
Oh,
so you got Amy trying to think and answer that question.
Okay, so that's really difficult to answer without looking at
sure.
the tree.
Well, it's gone now.
Yeah, so there's several things that could have happened. It could have had some freeze damage in that area up there. It could have been hit by hail. It could have had a bore. You know, there's a lot of reasons that it will start to do that weeping. Anytime there's damage to the trunk, that's when those cankers can occur. And then it's trying to work to seal that off, and it just, it's unsuccessful. So
yeah,
I can't tell you why that happened. Probably the first thing is, where does your brother live?
Here. Guernsey.
Okay, it's an apricot in Wyoming. Right. I mean, so that's a tough place for an apricot to live. Not impossible, but you're probably going to have more issues just because it's not a, I mean, I love apricot. I think it is so cool, but it's not a long-lived tree. And you'll see that with a lot of those fruit trees. They just can't handle some of our conditions because they're just not zoned for Wyoming.
Right.
And
the
so
cold.
it's amazing if they are living here, and if you do have those little hiccups, it's just
par for the course,
yeah.
I think.
Sorry to interrupt. I've been tapped. It's time to take a break and listen to our sponsors.
Pleasant Valley Greenhouse is ready for the growing season. As you anticipate and plan your garden or outdoor space, know that we are working hard now at Pleasant Valley to help make your efforts successful later. We have compost, seeds, flowers, and that great selection of edibles and perennials you expect every year. And of course, our incredible planters and hanging baskets. Come and see us. We're open daily. Call 532-GROW for information. Pleasant Valley Greenhouse. 3 miles west of Main Street, Torrington.
Need some help mowing your lawn? Then let Levi's Lawn Care help you out this summer. Levi can mow your yard at very affordable prices. He starts at around $20 per week, and that includes mowing and trimming. Levi can also aerate your lawn and offers tree trimming and stump grinding. Let Levi take care of the mowing duties of your lawn this summer. Give him a call at 575-1626. That's 575-1626.
ready to step into home ownership? Here at Platte Valley Bank, I can help you take advantage of every adventure. Whether you are building, buying, or moving up, we have the home loan to fit your needs. You have plans, goals, and dreams for your future home. Let me help guide you down the right path for the perfect home loan. I'm Ashley Arns of Platte Valley Bank in Torrington. Stop by and see why you belong here.
Platte Valley Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
It's time to turn your sprinkler system back on. Chris Miller at Sunrise Sprinkler will do just that. He'll also check for sprinkler heads that may need fixed. And if you've been wanting a new sprinkler system, let Chris give you an estimate. Sunrise Sprinkler. Give Chris Miller a call at 575-4300. That's 575-4300.
Now is the time to ensure a beautiful and healthy lawn for this summer. Jordan Greenmaster Fertilizer is a premium formula high in iron and nitrogen, ensuring quick green up, good texture, and strong durability. Jordan is a division of Westco and produces top quality fertilizers specifically formulated for the Rocky Mountain region. Visit www.westco.coop to find the Jordan dealer nearest you. Westco, service, solutions, success.
Westco's your best value through and through.
Lawn getting that old, worn-out look, having to water and mow too often? Then it's time to call Torrington Sod Farm. They'll be happy to visit with you and show you why sod is the right answer. Call 532-2777. Torrington Sod Farm has been serving the area since 1999 and pride themselves on their service, quality sod, and exceeding customer expectations. They look forward to serving you, so give them a call for a free quote at 532-2777. Torrington Sod Farm. They make it easy. Easy being green.
Fertilizer, soil, and seeds. Oh my, spring has sprung, and Hauser Hardware at 18 South Wyoming Avenue in Guernsey has the stuff you need. Sprinklers and hoses, weed killer and pest control, in-ground sprinkler heads, and rain drip supplies. They also have yard equipment to rent. Hauser Hardware, 18 South Wyoming Avenue in Guernsey, 307-836-2611. Do it best with Hauser Hardware.
All right, we're back. This is Jeff Edwards and Jerry Urshebeck for the KERM Lawn and Garden Show, along with Amy Seiler and Tom John McCreary. We've been talking about trees, and Amy, during the break, you were quizzed a lot by Jerry with some things that we probably don't need to talk about, but
Tom John, come on, they were good subjects. It was like lightning, it was water,
fish.
So
Tom John, you asked a question about May Day trees, and Amy wanted to come back to that. So let's continue on that discussion.
Okay, so he had said, okay, my May Day tree has canker, and I need to kind of get rid of it. And so we were visiting, and I said, don't get rid of the tree. Cut the canker out, and let's see if the sucker... And it sounds like the trunk of the tree has canker in it.
No, Amy, mostly the up in the branches... Mm-hmm. I've got a couple. I've already cut one out, and the trunk looks great. But is there any treatment that I can use?
A chainsaw.
Yeah. Not really for cankers. I think the best way with cankers, you have to just prune it out, and just see what happens. I'm happy to hear that it's not in the trunk of the tree yet, so there's nothing that's affecting that direct transport of nutrients and water up the trunk yet. Once you start getting cankers in the trunk, that's when you just get rid of it. But I think if you have some canker in the branches, I would encourage you to try and cut that out, if it's manageable to do that. And then see what happens. I'm going to defer to you, Jeff. What has your experience been trying to work on cankers? Do you see that it spreads throughout the tree? What are your experiences?
It's a slow, agonizing process for everybody.
So, you know, and we did discuss in here also that should you just do a basal cut and start over also? And he had asked about transplanting one of the suckers. And I apologize to everybody. I can't remember if a May Day tree is actually grafted, where you have a chokecherry rootstock, Prunus americana. Wait, yeah, no. What is choke cherry?
Don't know.
It's not Prunus Americana.
You're the tree lady. I don't know what that
that's
is.
That's plum. Oh, my gosh. Don't listen to me. Anyway, if it's just on a regular choke cherry rootstock and then they've grafted a desirable something on top, I don't remember. So you can kind of look at the base and see if you can see if there's a graft.
So is that why Mayday tree flowers look like?
Yes, choke cherry.
Choke cherry. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Yes.
And the birds love them, especially robins.
So they're in the same family?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And they will sucker. They'll mm-hmm. sucker right from the bottom all the time.
But they don't produce a fruit.
Yes, they do.
They do.
It's mm-hmm. a little red berry.
Is it edible for us?
I don't know.
So is the seed in it like a pit?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh.
And it makes a mess on your concrete.
Interesting. Okay.
It's super similar to choke cherry.
Okay.
The birds eat them, and then they really make a mess.
Well, they just spread them around. Little fertilized packets
spread them around. Yeah. Plant them. So, you know, we have a lot of Mayday. Well, not a lot. We have some Mayday coming up. But, you know, I think that they're pretty much sprouts. This one that I have as a secondary tree is, I don't know, 4 feet away from the original tree. But typically, I have to cut those sprouts off the bottom of the tree.
Do you know what I think is interesting is that I worked for a garden center for like 10 years, and we tried Mayday tree, and we tried it, and we tried it, and we just never could get it to grow where we could, like, guarantee it for people. And I love hearing this discussion that both of you have Mayday trees, and for the most part, they've been doing well. You know, how long have you had yours? I mean,
They were planted years ago, the early 2000s, and so the trunks are a foot across, mm-hmm. and they're just a great tree. And my apricot trees were planted down below, because I'm on a hillside, and I think the reason they're doing well is because of that winter cover. The snow blows in there, they get plenty of moisture, and I use bark chips, not many because you get mold if you put too many bark chips in. Just put a light layer of bark chips just so they can retain moisture. What do you think, Amy?
What's wrong with mold?
What's wrong?
It's mycorrhiza.
What's mold got to do with
it? So I don't think that you need to suffocate your plant with 12 inches of mold. So that would be very bad. A nice 3 to 4 inches of mulch is good.
Oh, you just blew Tom John's mind.
But I'm not going to say, Tom John's is growing apricots in his practice. So I am not going to... Whatever he's doing, he's doing just fine for those apricots.
Tom John, do your apricots fruit?
Out of the 4 years we've been at the new house, I got 14 apricots last year. And these trees are huge. This year, even with the frost,
Full blossoms. Bees
came in and pollinated them. And I think I'm going to get a regular bunch of apricots. 1 year we just had hundreds.
So my mother has apricots in Riverton, Wyoming. They have really hard winters. It gets cold, stays cold. They get a lot of snow. And that plant, she has a couple of them, they bloom almost every year. They didn't blossom last year at all, something weather related. But the number of fruit that thing produces is amazing. And it's a short window. I mean, you got to eat them now when they're ready, mm-hmm. otherwise, or I'll figure out what else to do with them. Fruit, anytime you can get fruit like that mm-hmm. is great. So she gave me some volunteer plants from that particular most productive tree. We've had them in the ground for, I'm going to say over a decade, but Diane will probably correct me later on when I get home. They're over 10 feet tall. The bases are 6 inches in diameter, probably. Never bloomed. They have never bloomed.
Is that a soil situation with Sheep Creek being so sandy? I don't know.
It could be
just
that they're
guessing.
So sandy. I have no idea. I might not be giving them the right amount of water. Like, okay, whatever.
Well,
my neighbor was eating apricots that she purchased from the store and threw the pits out onto the ground, and voila, they grew.
Did they produce?
Yeah. And again, it's like Tom John says, every so often there's a bumper crop. In Dennis's tree, every so often there's a bumper crop. But they're so susceptible to that early frost and getting rid of your blossom. And I don't even know that it gets anything past blossom.
I'm sorry, Amy, if you were...
No, you tell. Go ahead.
Okay, so, you know, I've tried to keep them pruned and maintained. And it's nice when you revisit that tree at a later date and time and are able to look at that cut that you made, and it's sealed over 100%. I'm like, wow, I did something right on a tree.
Okay, isn't that one of the most exciting things where you think...
And satisfying.
It is. You're like, I am good.
Yeah, I did something
yes,
right.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much. Yes, I am... Yeah, that's such a great feeling. I kind of do some pruning on my buckeye tree, and I love watching how that wound seals over. And if you do that cut if you do it like really well, it's a perfect circle, and it'll all start to kind of come together all at the same time.
And each half, it just
so
comes
awesome.
Together perfectly, half on one side, half on the other side. Yeah.
But when you have that half inch hole that just never seems to do anything, little critters in and out, you go, yeah,
I didn't do that one.
That was one of mine. Wasn't one of my best days.
So one of my favorite things, we for the city of Gearing, we do a scavenger hunt for our fourth graders for our Arbor Day celebration, and it always asks, one of the things that you're supposed to find is a cat eye on a tree.
Oh.
And the kids are always like, what is a cat eye? Well, on certain trees, if you prune it correctly and as it seals over, especially on oaks, you see it a lot on oaks, but you can see it on lindens and even some hackberry, as it seals over, it genuinely looks like a cat's eye. And it's pretty funky. And when you show it to the kids, they're always like, so that's the sign of a perfect cut.
I think some adults would do the same, have the same response.
Yeah. Amy, I had lindens, and I guess I just didn't look because I pruned them real close to the trunk, but I just wasn't looking for it, you know. And I'm blind, so that doesn't help.
It depends on the size of the wound. You know, if you just do a little tiny one, that cat eye is not going to be as obvious. But if you're taking like
half inch,
a 4-inch, I mean, even you know,
larger,
big, yeah, some bigger cuts, those will seal over, and it's pretty cool on the trunk of a tree. So everybody, go out, look for the cat eyes, and see what you think. Take some pictures and send them to Jerry.
Amy, my son-in-law in Sheridan, Wyoming, and my daughter have cottonwoods. And this must be an evolutionary trait, but they make pockets in the roots are on top of the soil and makes little pockets where water gathers. Is that a genetic thing?
In the root?
On the root. The roots are exposed. It's fascinating.
Have they been mowed off and damaged?
Yeah.
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 Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind.
But it's cool, isn't it?
It is.
It's not genetic. It's mechanical manipulation.
Now, to be honest, if it was a shell, they're shallow rooted. You know, if you had wildlife or anything kind of going over the top of that would wound that root, that's a callus. If you're mowing over those shallow roots, it's defense mechanism to be like, oh my gosh,
I'm damaged.
I'm wounded. And it's like, you know, have you ever had like a cut yourself and you actually heal like a keloid wound?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I'm humanizing them again, but it kind of reminds me of like a little keloid wound. It's like, holy crud, I've got to put this funky seal over here to try and protect it. So,
yeah.
Not that that's what a keloid is, but it just reminds me
of
that.
So, Tom John, they're they're collecting water to share with other things, not just their buddy plants. They're sharing with
the
other
little
things.
Birds yeah. will drink out of that, I'm sure.
Some of them are sizable.
Oh, yeah, they're big.
They're mm-hmm. big, and that's interesting, but I didn't know what was causing it. I thought it was evolutionary traits.
I was telling Amy how I deal with trees that poke me in the eye or poke me in the head when I'm mowing, and I said, I whack them off. She says, Jerry, put a bigger mulch ring around it. It'll keep you away from that limb and keep those lower limbs alive and well, and instead of whacking them.
So we have a cedar. I want to say it's a cedar tree, but it could be a juniper. I can't tell them apart.
It's hard.
And smell. In our... Oh, that smell, which one smells like a cat?
The juniper.
Oh, okay. Anyhow.
I think they all stink.
They all do. So it's kind of been interesting. It's, I don't know, 10 feet, 12 feet tall now, but... About every 2 years, we, instead of taking the limbs off, we actually make the ring a little bit bigger so that we're not running into it with mm-hmm. the mower.
Yeah.
Every couple of years.
Juniper berry, isn't that what gin is, has that distinct flavor? Is that a juniper berry?
Yes.
I believe so.
Yes. Gin is made from juniper berries.
I don't drink enough gin, apparently. I don't know.
In England, it was a cheap drink.
Oh, mercy.
So, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about your three favorite trees. We've talked about two of them. What's your third?
Okay, so this is a new favorite.
Okay.
And I am truly falling in love with chinkapin oak. And chinkapin oak is not native to Wyoming or western Nebraska, but it is. Its native range starts in eastern Nebraska, kind of in the southeast corner. And we have not used it a lot in the nursery industry until, you know, probably the last 15 to 20 years. And so it's not out there a lot. But every one that I have planted... It's a little bit different than bur oak. Bur oak has a little bit more horizontal branching structure, which, by the way, I love bur oak, too. I just love it. But I'm just kind of setting my eyes on other things these days.
But the chinkapin is winning.
The chinkapin is winning my heart. It has a little bit more vertical branching structure, which I think would make it for a great street tree. It just has a little bit different form. And the other thing I love is that it has... I'm going to use some terminology here. It has more apical dominance. I don't have as many issues with double leaders mm-hmm. That I've observed with the chinkapin versus bur oak. And I like that because I can manage that. And my threat of damage down the road and just with those co-dominant leaders is less with the chinkapin oak. So the thing that I like about it is it leafs out about the same time as a bur oak, so it's going to avoid most of our frosts. It has been insanely adaptable to our soils. I'm really surprised. The leaf shape is not your typical oak leaf shape. It doesn't have a lobed leaf. It has a leaf that has large serrations on the edge, but it's kind of an larger elliptical shape.
Kind of hackberry-ish.
But it's super glossy and really thick. And it does have a large... Serration is not even the right word. I'm just going to say lots of little tiny lobes because it's not like a saw blade look.
Okay.
I also like it because it has a really cool fall color. It is a purpley rusty. Now, I'm not going to say that it's like drop dead, oh my gosh, like your maples out east, but it's different than everything else we have in our landscapes. And it does hold its leaves a little bit longer. It makes me nervous if we had some late or early fall snows, you may see a little bit of damage, but overall, I've been watching it in our parks, and I have one at my house, and I am loving it. Loving it.
Is it susceptible to the cynipid gall wasps that create the little marbles on the stems that bur oaks suffer from?
Not really? That I have observed. Wow. No. And it's a lot different than bur oak. And its bark is much different as well.
Its bark is louder?
Its bark is very sensitive. It forms that its rough bark later. You know, bur oak will put that on really early.
Yeah.
I've not noticed that. I have mine in a pretty protected spot, but I haven't noticed that it's been severely impacted by hail damage. The other thing that I want to mention is that I'm sure that some people cringe anytime that I say oak because they're like, what a waste of time. They grow really slow.
I'm going to be dead before it causes, I see the shade of that one.
Yes. Okay. So that is certainly not true with this species. My observations. If you looked up Durr's Manual of Woody Plants, he might say something different. In my yard, in our parks, we have had about 2 feet of growth a year.
Wow.
And that is a lot.
For an oak.
Yes, it is. And I'm getting that a lot on its terminal leader. Its laterals, maybe you're getting about 12, 15, maybe 18 inches. So I got mine from a garden center. It was in their dead pile because it just looked, the main trunk had pretty much died out. And so it had a whole bunch of suckers coming up, and I took one of the suckers and established it as my main. And then I left a lot of those suckers down there just to like allow it to get going. That was, gosh, it's so funny. It's probably been like 8 or 9 years ago that I started this little process. And my husband said, oh my gosh, what a waste of time.
You adopted another tree.
Yes. And he's like, stop it. And I did put mine in kind of a protected spot. It's on the north and west of it. I have two spruce trees, so it's kind of protected. But that tree is about 18 feet tall now.
Wow. That's awesome.
It's awesome. It is wonderful. And this year, for the first time at the top, I do have a co-dominant that I'm going to have to go in there and prune out. But a lot of those trees want to start doing that at 6 feet tall. This one, I didn't even have to worry about it. And it's been really fun. It's been an incredible process. But it's been really fun to try and get this tree going. So of my three trees, you know, Ponderosa Pine is probably like my heartthrob. And then just for old reliableness, Hackberry. And then for unique and unusual, Chinkapin is one of my favorites right now.
I'm going to have to check into that. That sounds awesome. I'm like Jeff said, I probably won't be around when it matures, but it's okay.
Do you know what? Even love on a middle age, they're still fantastic. Even at middle age, they're doing a lot. Mine hasn't produced acorns yet. That's the one thing with chinkapin is that they will produce acorns much later in life. Where bur oaks, they're producing acorns.
Oh,
at
yeah.
Like,
I've got a 10 or 12 foot tall oak tree, bur oak, and they've been producing acorns for 5 years.
Yeah,
and the squirrels keep planting them where I don't want them.
And Tom, you and I've got at least 20 more years. So,
I didn't take very good care of myself when I was younger, and so consequently, I don't think I have that long.
Are you making up for lost time now, though?
Well, maybe 15. And so in 15 years, you can have a, how tall, maybe a 24-foot?
A 20-foot chinkapin.
20-foot.
If it's happy, yep.
Yeah.
Oh,
if it's happy.
He'd be out there babysitting it every day.
Yeah. Talking to it, telling it how much you love it. I'm convinced that is why mine does so well, because I remind it often about how much I love it. So,
mm-hmm. Tom, plant it with a buddy so that they can share nutrients and water.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great idea, Jeff.
And you got to sing the song, Kumbaya. Yeah.
Hey, what's going on in Goshen County this coming up week?
I'm not sure, but I'll tell you
what.
That's
your job, Jerry, to let us know.
I am so happy with ourselves. My onion guru, Glenn Haney,
yep,
got me some onions. I said, when are you planting? And he says, Wednesday. And I got them planted Wednesday. You know, if you act like the person that knows the what they're doing, sometimes you get really, really good results. So I planted four bunches of sweet Spanish on Wednesday, and that is my best start ever.
Awesome.
So I sent you pictures of my last crop of onions.
Yeah.
And we seem to use an onion a day, at least.
Mm. Keeps the doctor away.
Onion and garlic. Yeah. Myrna, I'm way from Myrna, though.
My sweet corn is germinating in my high tunnel. It's up about, I don't know, an inch or so. Sweet peas are coming up. We've had salad multiple days. The strawberries are crazy this year, and this is all in the high tunnel, but they're over 12 inches tall. They've just stretched out, and they're blooming and have green berries on them, so, you know, 'tis the season.
Are those ever bearing, or are they
June
bearing?
No, they're June bearing, okay. And it's the funny thing is since they're in the high tunnel, the fruit actually is available a couple weeks earlier than it was out in the field, so... By the end of May, it's berry time.
But wouldn't you agree that it seems and feels like we're about 2 weeks early?
I would agree with that, yeah.
And, you know, would you plant underground bulbs to come up? That's still a little early, don't you think?
I'd wait till May to do that. I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't know.
Amy?
Well...
We're just guessing here about that's like the first frost or
results
the last frost.
May vary.
Yeah, your individual results may vary.
Okay, what's the soil temperature right now?
It's 40-ish. They're planting sweet corn.
Are they planting corn?
They're planting corn, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So corn is 50.
So here's my take. If people are chomping at the bit to put some of those bulbs in the ground, stick them in the ground. They're probably not going to do anything until the soil temperatures warm up, but... if we get some cruddy weather, and they've already emerged, cover them,
mulch them up.
I doubt that's going to happen because I think it's still a little, our nighttime temperatures are still pretty chilly.
Yeah, well, it was 50 degrees last night. Hey, we're getting the signal, unfortunately, that this hour has departed. And Amy, thank you very much for being here with us.
Thank you, Amy.
I loved it. Thank you. You made my day.
Tom John, I'm going to thank you, too, even though you wormed your way into our program today. But that's okay. We'll take you.
Any day. Any day.
Jerry, good to see you again.
Nice to be seen.
Thank you for all of our listeners. This is the KERM Lawn and Garden Program. We'll be back next week.